You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Good morning, everybody. Happy New Year's Eve.
Yes.
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a Wednesday. Keep an eye out for the weather today. We are in a winter advisory. Our sister station, 930 WBEN, will have you covered on all the updates going on there. Travel safe. Be safe tonight as well, of course, with it being New Year's Eve. I know it's a big party night
as well. I get that it's a party night, but if like if it's ugly out there, don't.
Right.
Don't do nothing silly.
Don't. You'll have next year. You'll have next week if you want to. It doesn't need to be a party
night
tonight.
We'll have literally tomorrow.
Right. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Also, tonight we've got Sabres at 8 going for 10 games in a row. Would be for just the fourth time in the team's history. They would have reached that milestone, the first since 2018-2019. And then, of course, Bills getting back to practice today as we prepare for what is in all likelihood going to be the final game at Highmark Stadium on Sunday, 4:25 against the New York Jets. And right off the rip, that's kind of where we want to start today. This is our last time on air for this week. We're off tomorrow for New Year's Day. Sal's got Friday with Sean McDermott. And so with that, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to give your favorite memories, your lasting memories of the current Highmark Stadium, I mentioned it last night on the nightcap for me, Derek. It's going to always kind of be my first game, is going to be my lasting memory. I am on the younger side. I'm under 30. So when I say 2011, be nice. But 2011.
Be nice.
2011, you know, going with my dad and my brother, first time at the stadium for a regular season game. I'd been to preseason games and stuff like that. But it doesn't register the same as the regular season ones or just really big events. You know, it's a preseason game. It is what it is. But I went as sort of a mix between an Eagles and a Bills fan. I've said this story before, but you know, the initial team that got me into football was not the Bills. It was the Eagles, the movie Invincible. You know, don't judge a boy too hard for not falling in love with Trent Edwards at quarterback. Like, it is what it is. But that 2011 season, I've mentioned it a lot. I have a lot of strong memories for, you know, ultimately that team that doesn't actually go to the playoffs and what finishes 6-10. But the start of the season was amazing, and I go to my first game, Derek, 2011, against the Eagles, then called the Dream Team with Michael Vick, DeSean Jackson.
Oh, my God.
All of those. Jeremy Maclin.
Dubbed by backup quarterback Vince Young.
Yeah.
Nnamdi Asamoah was signed there.
I mean, on paper, that team was supposed to be good, but yeah. I went there as sort of a mix. Again, it was just more of a fun experience finally being able to go to a Bills game, and it means something. Bills win that game. They beat the hell out of the Eagles. I think Vick throws like three or four picks. And I have not looked back since. I, at most now in my life, and really for much of my adolescence, kind of just more had like, oh yeah, the Eagles are cool. And I moved off of them entirely. Like, I am now a Bills fan entirely. And I do credit a lot of that to going to the stadium, to, you know, being at that game in part. And again, I mentioned this last night. You know, before that, the games I went to, Derek, were UB football games. And no disrespect to UB, UB Stadium and Highmark Stadium are very different beasts. And, you know, when you
and
get
it's tough to have a college town environment in a Bills town.
Right. And so, you know, 13-year-old Zach showing up to that stadium, you're like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. And I haven't looked back since. I haven't been able to attend many games past that. I went, I think either the next year or the year following when they hosted the Ravens, right after the Ravens had won the Super Bowl, EJ Manuel's the starting quarterback. That was my first game. I went with a bunch of buddies. That was a blast because it was just a bunch of – it was like six guys in high school. We spent the night at my one friend Kyle's house. We all got up early in the morning to go there. They beat the Ravens, which at the time you're like, there's no way. They just won the Super Bowl last year. Like, ooh, were we the Bills? Wait, we won? It was a blast.
When you asked the question, we talked about it. I have a depressingly low amount of times that I've been at the stadium for being around here for – 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, when you say be nice, to whom? you or myself.
Well, I know. I give off the sense that I'm young. You know, some of these people are going to hear 2011 and go, what?
The first person I'm kicking the butt of on that is me. God, I'm old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not mean to you. I'm mean to me. I'm also my first target always. But I have a very low amount of times that I've been at the stadium. And if you include preseason, that number goes from 4 to 5.
Yeah.
That'll happen when you've been around working Bills games at the station for 9 years now. And I'm not one of the main suspects, so I don't go there for the games. I'm here and I'm working all day. So I haven't been able to go to many games, especially with them being good. The first one that sticks out to me is one with my cousin, where it's a game that's whited out for everybody. It's whited out even for the people that went to it because it was snowing so much. Because tickets were like $7.
Oh, yeah.
For the Bills and the Cowboys to wrap up the season.
Yeah, baby.
And my cousin and I just went, yeah, we'll grab like 80 layers and just go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to text him about that later. He lives in Germany now. But that's the first one that sticks out to me. Not a good game. One that not many people remember. Kellen Moore was the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I remember how hype I was about Kellen Moore, the college player.
I mean, how are you not?
Oh, my God. At Boise State.
Boise State, baby.
At Boise State, he was a godsend. And now he's the third stringer on the Cowboys starting today because this game is meaningless for everybody involved. You could barely see the field from where we were sitting. And that's the first one I think of because those are the ones that in all the wrong ways do stick out.
They do. Yeah, you're right.
Because A, the stadium's not full. B, sometimes there's like a certain bit of goodwill to the community that, like you heard about like back in the day, like Russ Salvatore would buy tickets to make sure it wouldn't black out.
Yeah.
That didn't even happen for this game. That's how bad it was.
Looking at week 17, it's cold in December and they're not in the playoffs.
Week 17, yeah, I'm going to this game. Why not? And that's the first one I could think of. I don't have a long list.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, though, you know, they weren't good and they're good now. I always wonder how many people, even older, you mm-hmm. know, generations that have been around the stadium a lot longer, how many people's favorite Bills memory is now of the current team because of Allen, but also because of the drought and overcoming that and then sort of not even middling for a little while. The Bills break the drought, miss the playoffs 1 year, and then they're now 7 years in a row. They've been one of the best teams. There hasn't been a point where we've sort of danced around just being an okay team. You know, the playoffs still being the ultimate success for, you know, a little while there. I talk about it with the Sabres, and it was the same with the Bills drought where you almost stopped worrying about the Super Bowl and you were kind of just like, I just want to get in the dance. I don't care. Like I've mentioned that a lot when they do get into the playoffs that first year in 2017 and they go to Jacksonville, I couldn't care less about the game. It was more the fact that the drought was over. And so for them not even to have kind of that moment of or period of shakiness and are we sure they're going to stay? Are we sure they're any good? They have one off year where they sort of are like, yeah, we're going to reset. And everyone knew that. And then from then on, they've been awesome. 2019 is maybe the only time where you weren't really sure if they were good or not. But to be fair, yeah, they were. It just Allen hadn't ascended yet. They were a good team. Allen
yeah, they
ascended.
Were a good team. They just hadn't ascended yet. And it just, again, it's very interesting to me. But because I don't have such a long list of football games there, the other one that sticks out to me is the World Junior game
mm-hmm.
between U.S. and Canada. And it sticks out to me for a lot of reasons, but the biggest one being I got roasted here for liking those Bills-themed Team USA yeah. jerseys. Absolutely torched by everybody that worked here. I was the only one that liked them. I felt so alone. And then, in a moment of ill-advised spite, I bought myself a jersey of Austin Matthews.
It's good. Always do things out of spite.
What a traitorous move I made.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to upset everyone at that point because I was made fun of relentlessly. And I'm like, oh, yeah? Well, how's this? That day, though, I was everybody's friend.
Right, right.
That day, I was everybody's friend because I had a Team USA jersey, a Toronto Maple Leafs player jersey, and a Bills jersey. Canada friends, oh, Matthews, yeah. USA guys, nice Team USA jersey. Buffalo friends, Bills jersey.
Yeah.
Everybody liked me. And then I got back here and Howard chased me down the hall.
You had to get humbled at some point. You had to get humbled. I can understand that.
So, yeah, that was one, like, but also the game itself. It was that snow globe action. It wasn't windy. It wasn't.
It was picturesque.
It was very picturesque, exactly. But it was enough snow that they had to manually come out and take shovels for the ice crew, just like actual snow shovels, not the usual like that they do with the ice maintenance crew. But they had to actually scoop up the snow because it was that powdery goodness. But then Team USA wins that game in a shootout. Casey Mittelstadt, of course, is the people everyone's wanting to see. It was a fun time. And I'm pretty sure Brady Tkachuk had the eye black of Bills Mafia.
Oh, that's fun. I don't remember that, but that's fun.
Yeah. So, like, it was a really great time. It was very cool. I had a lot of fun with that. And as a matter of fact, as we have an opportunity to get connected with our fans, Brendan tweets in a picture of that game.
Oh, yeah. Well, you bring that one up. I was also thinking the Winter Classic because we're getting ready for that one down in Florida, which most people are making fun of. But I know so many people who weren't even at that game just remember seeing it on TV and going, no, that's the coolest thing that's happened at that stadium. We bring it picturesque. Right. It's the snow globe, snow. And while the Sabres don't win, it's still this, oh, my good. Like, this is exactly what we wanted. This is exactly what
the league wanted. It's what you picture when you're out on the pond skating.
Yeah, so, like, those are also – I didn't attend those games. Those are also some I think of as just some of the cooler memories to happen at Highmark. And look, to be perfectly honest, they're getting a new stadium. It's not a dome. They're probably going to have more of these. They are probably going to have some of those games. They won't have a Super Bowl. The city of Buffalo probably can't, have it, even if they had a dome, just the infrastructure. But in terms of those, the Winter Classic, maybe even, like, you know, Olympic hockey games, they could absolutely do something like that. I know World Cup soccer games has always been kind of the idea. Well, not World Cup soccer games, but U.S. national team soccer games could be something as well. I'm excited for those nights coming up. But with this being our last time on this week and in all likelihood the last game at Highmark Stadium being on Sunday, definitely want to get people's thoughts. And we'll do that here. 803-0550, the number to call. I want to give your thoughts. And we'll start this morning off with David on the line. David, how we doing?
Hey, good. How you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I mean, lasting memory from this stadium, it's got to be for me the home opener of 2014. My mom was a lifelong Bills fan. I am not a Buffalo native, but I was lucky enough to have a mother who was a Bills fan. So I grew up a Buffalo Bills fan. She was her 60th birthday, and I surprised her with front row end zone tickets. She'd never been to a game before. And this was kind of like a culmination of a lot of things that were leading up to this game. I mean, it was the first game after Ralph C. Wilson had died. Mm-hmm. It was the first home game after they announced that the Pegulas had bought the Bills. It was, you know, a little bit before they had announced that Jim Kelly was cancer-free and he was going to be the legend of the game. Sammy Watkins, it was going to be his first home game appearance. So it was like a lot, you know, you couldn't get tickets to this. So it was like a big deal. My mom was excited. I called in a huge favor for somebody who worked for the Bills. They got me sideline credentials from my mom, and I didn't tell her until we got there. So she was ecstatic. You know, she's going all over the place. She's, you know, stars in her eyes. And then we get to the front row end zone seats. It was just a memorable game. I mean, we were sitting right there. CJ Spiller, he had a 100-yard kickoff return touchdown. Mm-hmm. He almost ran right to us. And my mom, she's 60 years old, but she's slamming the padding right in front of her, you know, classic Bills fan. The Bills went on to win it 29-10, and it was honestly one of the most euphoric moments I've ever seen for my mom. And the reason why I remember this beyond that is the legacy of that game and that moment with her, because my mom had cancer, and she died less than a year later. And at that game on the sideline, she got to meet Jim Kelly, who was also, you know, had just gotten cleared from cancer. So they, you know, they briefly met for like 10, 15 seconds. But that was kind of like, you know, she was amazed by that.
Yeah.
I took a photo of her before we got sent to our seats. And she's on the sideline and she's smiling ear to ear. And she's in a Doug Flutie jersey because Doug Flutie was her favorite. That picture of her She died less than a year later. That photo was there at her service. That photo a decade later was there at my wedding where she was going to be sitting. And that photo sits on my wall in my house to this day. And, you know, when I think about my mom, I look at that image. That's what I picture, is her happy at the Bills game. I think about that game when I think about memories at the Ralph or Highmark.
Yeah, absolutely, David. Thank you for that call.
That's a lot to be able to put out there, too. I appreciate that story. Because, again, it's not necessarily even about the result on the field. It's about the people you go with. It's about the stories about that. That they could have stunk that game. And I'm pretty sure it's probably a top – like, it's an all-timer, though, for him and his mother because of the impact.
Mm-hmm.
So –
That's where
thank you for the call. Yeah. That's a big one.
And that's where Bills Mafia comes in. Is during the drought. It's not in the '90s.
Drought football.
When they're winning. I mean, this is drought 2014. They go 9-7, but they're still like they're in.
And they handle the Dolphins, which of course right. Everybody loves to see.
But we're still like in the chokehold process of the drought. It feels you're not getting out. Where are we going? And yet, like for you to get such good memories even from that. I mentioned 2011. Like, I have such fond memories of that season. They go like 6-10. They're not good. David has that connection with his mom, and it's a season they still don't wind up winning, making the playoffs or anything like that. But it doesn't matter, like you said, because of the people that you're around, the people you're with, the people you went to those games with. And this is where I do really, and I mean this, no matter where my career takes me, if I ever leave Buffalo, I stay here for whatever it is. I will always appreciate this about Buffalo and its fans is that college feel to it. And I don't mean the rowdiness or anything like that, but just the genuine connection the community has to the team. You don't get that in Los Angeles. You just won't. People love the Lakers and they do see that as like their team, but that's maybe kind of the only one. We joke about the Chargers all the time, just not having their fans. Anybody into SoFi. Dallas is maybe too big of a brand. People in Dallas love the team, but they're such a big brand. They're everywhere. And it does kind of just feel like I just wound up being a Dallas fan. And it might happen to a certain extent with Buffalo, with Josh Allen. But there is something too, being in Buffalo, having that around. And David even mentioned he's not from Buffalo. He's not a Buffalo native. His mom, though, was a fan. But there is always going to be that connection. The small market, the very almost niche market of Buffalo can really bring people together. And you just don't get that in some of the bigger cities. And it will always be something that I find very beautiful and very romantic with the sport of football in Buffalo in and of itself. And we're seeing it now with the Sabres as well. For as much heartache as they give people, they go on a bit of a win streak. And you do feel a bit of a fervor in the town.
Everyone's in a hoopla.
Yeah. Again, a number to call, 803-0550. David, thanks for the call there. It was wonderful to hear from you. We'll go back to the phones. Brad is up next. Brad, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing well.
Hey, listen, I've been to plenty of significant games there. I don't go too much anymore, but I just had one moment with my grandfather, my father, and my brother when I was 8 years old. I don't know the specific, time frame, but you guys would. It's when the Bills beat the Dolphins for the first time after so many years, and I was sitting in the section, and it was probably like late 70s, like I said, and when the Bills won, I remember Larry Zonka scoring a touchdown, and it was pouring rain, and the turf was so slick, he like slid into the end zone. It was right in front of me. But when the Bills won, they tore down the goalposts, and Ralph Wilson's box was behind our seats, and they tore down the goalposts, and then they handed the goalpost up all the way along, the stands up to where we were. And, my dad's like, touch the goalpost, and I helped hand it up, and they opened up, slid the window open to Ralph Wilson's box, and they put the goalpost in there, And it was, as a kid, you're like, what the heck just happened, right? It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I mean, there's been plenty more, but, when you're a young kid going to a game, it's a privilege, and, I was with my whole family. It was pretty cool.
So. Absolutely. Brad, thanks for the call.
Brad, thanks for the call.
This is a game I dug more into yesterday because we had a call about that on the afternoon show. And what I find most fun about this – so, Derek, the starting quarterbacks for this game were Bob Greasy for Miami and then Joe Ferguson for the Bills.
Right.
I want you to guess how many picks Joe Ferguson threw.
Four.
Five. They win that game.
You
17
asked me, and I'm like, I have a sense of the direction you're going here.
So the Bills win that game 77. It's the opener to the 1980 season. They stop the losing streak at 21, so it only goes to 20. They score 14 points in the fourth quarter, and Fergie throws five picks. And this is where me and Mike Schopp are in lockstep with this. It is my favorite thing to go back into some of these older games. And older, I do mean around like the 80s into the 70s and 60s. And I'm a bit of a historian with all this stuff, and I do really enjoy it. But my favorite aspect, Derek, everyone turned the ball over at such an obnoxious rate. It is stunning that turnovers ever became the bugaboo that they are in the modern NFL. Ferguson throws five picks. They win 17-7. Like, you would not know he does that.
Well, the Bills' defense also comes away with four picks of their own on that day.
It's incredible.
Against two quarterbacks.
Don Strock, baby.
And the weirdest thing about all of it, though, is like having an opportunity to look at any of these like older games and how wild the box scores are.
It's the best. It's the best.
Or even, ready? You don't even have to go that far. In the 90s, there are times where Jim Kelly's throwing like 20-plus interceptions in a year.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. His first ever game he starts with, I think, is like the 86 opener. He has almost 300 yards. His completion percentage is like 70, has three touchdowns. And you're like, that's a modern NFL stat. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. And you're right. And then there will be seasons where he has like one more touchdown than picks. But it didn't matter. Like, him, Elway, they were considered, you know, the cream of the crop of their position. It was such a wildly different game. But a game that, like, if I ever could, I'd want to go sit down for like a 1977 game. Just to legitimately feel the difference of the sport from what it is now.
Yeah.
Because they are just wildly different sports in many aspects, although in some, they are exactly the same.
In some, they're exactly the same, but not very often.
803-0550, again, the number two call. We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, Sal Capaccio will also join the show. We'll get, of course, his favorite memories for Highmark Stadium from both a kid and now, of course, when he's working. And also, Bills returning to practice today as they get ready for Sunday, 425, hosting the New York Jets. That's all coming up next when we come back. You're listening to the...
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. My head hurts. We just spent the last 30 seconds going through playoff scenarios for the Bills. Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline.
And then
Sal,
I threw a fifth one in there to cause migraines for both of us.
I think we got to the point where the only team the Bills can't play in the wild card round is the Chargers. I'm not 100% sure on that. Again, my head hurts. How you doing?
Ooh. It's good. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you guys. Yeah, I think that's right.
And that's right. I drew up the literal only scenario, Sal, and it's this. The Bills have to win. Chargers lose. Texans win. Jaguars lose. Texans move to the 3. Bills move to the 6. It's the only way they could face the Texans. I need a Tylenol. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, that's right. That's right. They could still play Denver.
Oh, yeah.
They could still play anybody. They could still play New England at Jacksonville. So right now, the odds are most likely at Jacksonville, second most likely at New England. And then a whole bunch of other things are kind of up in the air. I think Denver would probably fall next, but it could still be Pittsburgh or, you know, Baltimore.
Yeah.
Now, I think that most conventional wisdom Bills fans, not everybody agrees with this, would say you don't want Houston, you don't want Baltimore, right? For two different reasons. Houston because of their pass rush, Baltimore because of their run game. There's no doubt about that. Houston, as you said, it would take a bit to get there because I would think Jacksonville is going – They're going to try and win the division. They're going to try and beat Indy. They're going to finish as the 3.
And but anything can happen. Tennessee.
Tennessee. I
they're facing Tennessee.
And Houston's facing Indy. That's right. Yep. Okay, so you probably think Jacksonville wins that, but weirder things have happened. Look at Atlanta against the Rams the other night, right? I mean, weirder things have happened. Okay, so then you have, if Houston sees that happening, here's the thing, though. If Houston sees at 1 o'clock that Jacksonville has things in hand, does Houston start to pull their starters? All of a sudden they lose because of it. Chargers are already resting their guys. We know that.
Yep.
I could see a scenario where the Bills jump into the five.
Oh, I could too. And Sal, kind of a fun thing for Bills fans as well. For the most part, we will know what the Bills need to do and where they can go because they're the 425 game. And most of these games that we'll keep an eye on are the 1 o'clock ones, obviously outside of the AFC North matchup for Sunday Night Football.
That's right. So what's interesting is, and I don't think you can tell, if the Bills, when the Bills go out to play the Jets, I think we'll talk about this. I think they're going to treat it like they want to give guys rest, but they want to win the game. It's the last game at Highmark, and the guys who go out there, they're trying to win the game for sure. So if Mitch Trubisky's out there for most of the game, and he's looking to throw touchdown passes, no doubt. So I think you're trying to win the game. I think what happens then is if you win and you know that win gets you to the five, well, then we all become big Pittsburgh Steelers fans, I guess, right? I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
On Sunday night, because you wouldn't know your opponent till Sunday night, though, if that happens. That's the issue.
Yeah, it's good. That's where I'm excited for Sunday, because Sal, I'm right there with you. I think the Bills are going to, for the most part, treat this as they can rest guys. Now, it's not a preseason game. They're not going to have 90 guys on the roster. They're going to have to kind of play a little bit with the roster. We all look at Allen, but does not mean the entire offensive line is going to get changed out. It could, but does not mean it can. But that is going to be something to keep an eye on. And Sal, I do wonder, on a Wednesday, sitting here now, who do you want the Bills to go play? Like, who is the team you want to see them the most go to?
I don't know. I go back and forth between New England and Jacksonville. I really do. There's different reasons for both, which is I think you feel they can really match up with New England, and they're not super explosive like on the outside without Mac Hollins, but they have Drake May, and he's amazing. And Drake May he deserves every bit of the MVP love he's getting. There's no doubt about it. They don't have this incredible run game, but they can rip off explosive runs, and they play good sound defense, but it's not like something like you see in Houston, right? Okay. So that's that. But guys, I just can't stomach the thought of going there and losing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just it's in my brain. I mean, you lose in any game, it's tough, but go there and lose after the reign that they had, then you took them over, and then they have Drake May, they win the division. That there also is a great thought of go there and beat them and say, who cares about your division?
That's where I'm at, Sal. Like, I know Jacksonville's the most likely, but in my head, I'm like, let them have the AFC East. We've gotten it 5 years in a row. Maybe you need a little, humble yourself, and then just go back there, beat them again, and be like, cool, have the MVP, have the division.
Yeah.
You didn't even win a playoff game. Good for you. I need that a little bit in my body. I know Jacksonville's likely, but ugh.
I know Jacksonville is like this really scary monster right now, like the way they're playing. Like, that's the other part. Like, everybody says, look how they're playing. That's real. I mean, they have just been putting it on teams lately, and good teams. I mean, they scored 34 against the Broncos defense, right? I mean, like, they put it on good teams. They scored 35 against the Chargers defense. I also know that, like, they've also had moments this year, and they're on a roll right now, but that doesn't have to stay. Last week, they struggled a bit. They finally came back. They beat Indy. I also think that, you look at them, they are very good against the run. They're not a huge, great pass rush team, but their pass defense is good. Like, they get interceptions. They can take the ball away. If you go down to Florida, you have good conditions. I don't know. I think the Bills, I give the Bills a good chance there, because I think it's a quarterback they've faced. I know they've lost to Trevor Lawrence. I get it. It's a quarterback they've faced. They've seen him. It's a first-time head coach. So there's a lot that goes into all this,
There's a lot to go into everything about this season, Sal, especially with how crazy it has been. We've talked about this how many times throughout the season, Sal. The Bills could absolutely run through the AFC because everyone's got questions this time around. But when it comes to the Bills themselves, they are a team that we saw the worst of it this past weekend when they score 12 points. It's frustrating how the offense can't get things done and at least finish it off. But here you are once again. The Bills have one of the highest ceilings, I should say, of anybody in the National Football League, and here they are sitting playing on the road.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the debate is, and I think this is a really good exercise, is it better to have Kansas City and Cincinnati and maybe even the Ravens, who knows now, out of the way versus going on the road three straight games? I don't know. I think going on the road three straight games is tough. It's really tough. I think it's tough in the regular season. Now you're placing good teams in the playoffs. That's all, there's something about playing at home here in Buffalo and people coming here, the mental aspect of it, going on the road is tough. So, yeah, I think it's a very, very tough proposition. In a vacuum, the Bills can win any week against any of these teams. They can also lose any week against any of these teams. I'd like their chances a lot more if they're at home, because we've seen them on the road this year just be very Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, absolutely. Sal Capaccio here on the Wester Hotline. Sal, the Bills are getting back to practice today. We have mentioned it already. This kind of might be a little bit closer to a preseason game than a regular season game. But, of course, always injuries to keep an eye on, especially late in the year. Dalton Kincaid, really, I think, chief among them.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's two parts of this week's injury report. Number one is, how are guys trending at practice? And number two is, what will the team do Sunday with them, even if they are trending to play? Because I think if anybody is notable that's, you know, getting there, you might just back off on them anyway. And I think Dalton Kincaid is first and foremost for this, Zach, which is, if Dalton Kincaid, like, to me, you don't play him this week. There's no reason to.
Right, yeah.
There's no reason at all. You give him another week. I don't think you play Daquan Jones or Jordan Poyer. The guys that have been injured, there's no reason to play them this week. That, to me, the way I look at it. Now, if they're super healthy and they want to get a few reps in, that's how the team has to decide it, with the medical staff, with the player, with the coaching staff. But I just think that you go into this game with anybody who is – here's how you start. Everybody says, who are they going to rest? Who are they not going to rest? Are they going to rest players? The first thing you do if you're Sean McDermott is you go to who's injured. And that's how you have to start with who should rest and who shouldn't. All the other stuff about, well, back off this guy, give him some rest – You got to decide first who's banged up that has to sit out, because there's only so many spots you can not play people. Everybody else has to play. You only get 48 guys to dress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you have a preseason roster at your disposal. You don't. You get two elevations. Four guys are out of elevations. It's not easy to do. So I think the first thing you do is you look at who's been injured. Dalton Kincaid, Daquan Jones, Jordan Poyer, Matt Prater, all these people. Terrell Bernard, we already know, is out for the game. That's where you start with, what should we do? And then you get to Josh Allen, of course. We know that he's healthy enough to play. But to me, he starts. He gets his starting streak to continue. And then you get him out of there very quickly.
So because you can't sit everybody, this isn't a college roster. You only have the 53 and actually the game day 45. I would imagine that James
48.
Cook. Oh, 48. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
Yep.
But I would imagine, though, that James Cook probably gets some run here against the Jets. They'll see and they'll know entering that game just how much he needs to get in order to get past Jonathan Taylor, and how much he would have to play. Obviously, Derrick Henry could sneak up and steal it in Sunday Night Football, but I don't think they're going to really account for that. But James Cook, I would imagine, probably gets some run here against the Jets.
I think this depends a little bit on what happens with Jonathan Taylor at 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan Taylor's 47 yards behind James Cook. If Jonathan Taylor passes James Cook, I fully expect James Cook to play enough to pass him. Like, James Cook has said, he didn't say this to me. I heard the TV broadcast a few weeks ago when they did a TV production meeting. They asked him, I think it was maybe Ian Eagle and JJ, like, is the rushing title important to you? He said, yes, it's important to him. It's important to his family. And I think it's important to the Bills and their organization. Like, of course, the Bills, you know, the last time, you guys know the last time, last time that a rushing title leader was in the 70s, right? That was OJ.
It was OJ, yeah.
But the last time they led the league in rushing, by the way, I looked it up, it was 2016 with LeSean.
Okay.
They led the league in yards per game. They have a chance to do that too. But I think it's important to the Bills. I think it's important to James Cook. What did they do last year, week 18? The game meant nothing. They pulled James Cook out. They get to the goal line. They put him back in just so he can get the rushing TD record.
Right, exactly.
That's right.
So, like, they've shown that when guys are going for stuff, they're not going to just pull back, right? And I do that, like that.
They've always kind of tried to do right, if you will, by the guys. You remember a few years ago, they tried to get another touchdown pass to, like, another guy to have that the number of touchdown passes to different players, right? Like, these are things that they'll be cognizant of, but you have to thread the needle of, at what point do you put a player at risk, and you don't want to do that. Because you also have to remember, even if, let's just say, Jonathan Taylor runs for 70 yards, James Cook needs 30 or 40 yards. He goes out there and gets it. Well, you also have Derrick Henry right now, who's 150 behind, and he plays later. So he could catch up, and then I guess you just say, well, if he does, he does, and he has a great game. There's nothing we can do. But I think you treat James Cook depending on what Jonathan Taylor does. The question for me is, if Jonathan Taylor doesn't pass James Cook, does he play at all?
That is exactly what I was thinking of. If the Colts have a bad game, Taylor doesn't do anything, do they just go, all right, Cook, you're not playing. Like, we're rolling.
They
with
might.
Ty Johnson
they might. I mean,
Davis.
or he may want to, you know, pad it a little bit before Derrick Henry, and he might want a few reps. You know, just to get. You know, hey, I want to go out there, play the last game in Highmark Stadium. I think all that stuff has to be baked in.
Yeah, absolutely. I selfishly want Cook to get the rushing title because I want to have a conversation in the summer, and I need that rushing title for me to really kind of lean into it. But that is a topic for a few months from now.
Yeah,
Sal,
you got it, buddy.
Another player to kind of keep an eye on, I think, for Bills fans, especially over, I would say, the last 2 months or so, Keon Coleman. He is starting to rack up the healthy and actives. I imagine he will play quite a bit on Sunday just due to the depth and wanting to sit guys. Sal, right now, really, like, where do we sit with Coleman? It's his second year, second-round pick for the Bills, but it already feels like it is trending the way of Kyer Elam.
I agree with you. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made in the offseason about this and probably a lot of conversations about it, a lot of evaluation and analysis on all of this. There's so many different variables involved, and, you know, Keon's still a young player, and you hope that he can kind of figure it out a little bit. I think there's, you know, the stuff off the field is leading to the stuff on the field, meaning I don't think they can trust him right now, right? If you can't do the things you're supposed to do off the field, and he's been late, and then he's not producing enough to justify putting him on the field if you can't trust him like that. That's number one. Number two is, though, you get to the offseason, and do you feel that he can take that next step? And you don't just want to, you know, say, okay, we're moving on from this player after 2 years. Kyer Elam, remember, that was the third year. After three years, they moved on from him. And he never had any. Kyer Elam, he was always raved about his work. Kyer Elam was a very hard worker. He just never was good enough to be able to, you know, be on the field enough. And that was just a guy that they drafted that never turned out from that aspect. And I think Keon's a little different here. Now, what's interesting to me, guys, is I think Keon, this is a really great opportunity if they want for him to get on the field. As long as he's doing everything right off the field, you get him on the field this week and say, okay. Remember last year, like, he played a lot against New England. They had a ton of targets. He only caught a couple balls.
Yeah.
Now, Trubisky was the quarterback that day, and it wasn't the best day for everybody offensively. But I think this is the week where maybe you play Keon Coleman and say, show us what you can do if you want us to think about dressing you during the playoffs.
Sal Capaccio here on the Wes Herr Hotline. As it is the final game, at least scheduled, crazy things have happened. They could move up a seed. We can't guarantee it here. But, Sal, with it being what is expected to be the final game at Highmark Stadium, we've been talking a little bit about memories. And, Sal, you've been working on the Bills Radio Network for quite a while now, and I would imagine you have plenty of memories before that as well. What are the ones that really hit home for you about Highmark Stadium?
Well, number one, and I know that it's diverging a bit from kind of how we talk about this, but I got a chance to play there, guys. I played a high school championship game there.
There you go.
And it was amazing. And, you know, I remember coming out of the tunnel and seeing the blue and gold, and Zach's also a Cleve Hill alum, right? And seeing the blue and gold out there and, you know, people rooting for it. It was just super cool to come out of the tunnel as a player. It really was, right? As a young kid, I was, 16 years old at the time. So that was awesome. But 2 years before that was my first ever game. Always sticks out to me. It was in the snow against New England. They lost. They had to win the last two games of 87. They didn't. They lost to New England in a low scoring game. That was my first ever game there. And I remember that. I remember exactly where I sat, kind of right below where the writer's press box is right now over there on the Bills, the tunnel side in the corner, sat there. And then listen, nothing will ever top 51-3 to me. I was there. I was a senior in high school. It was 41-3 at halftime. It was a party the entire second half. I mean, you guys remember the perfect game, what that was like. When you just knew, like, you knew at halftime the Bills are rolling in this game. Like, there's just, the Patriots dynasty is dead, right, and buried, and the Bills are fine. And, like, you knew the whole second half to revel in it. That was it going to a Super Bowl. Like, you knew the whole second half, we knew this team was going to their first ever Super Bowl. It was amazing, right? That's the best memory I ever have there. Going as a fan, the perfect game is one of them as a broadcaster though. And like as a game itself, as a moment, I mean, Nyheim Hines after DeMar, incredible, absolutely incredible. There's been some great ones over the years. Just for me, just watching and being on the field as Josh Allen and seeing some of the things he does has been amazing. So, you know, walk off field goal against Miami in the snow and snow angels, super cool. The snow game in 2017, all those kinds of things come to mind for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I never played football at Cleve Hill. My brother did, though. He got to do that. He's talked about it being one of those surreal moments. So, absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about, Sal. Just one last thing here before we let you go. Obviously, we're all going to be off tomorrow for the New Year's. Friday, you're going to have Sean McDermott, of course, and then any other schedule bits for fans to keep an eye on the rest of the week.
Yeah, well, they're going to be practicing today and tomorrow like a normal Wednesday and Thursday. But as you said, we won't really have anything on the radio again until Friday when Sean McDermott joins me on the Extra Point Show to give an injury update, and we'll talk about the Jets game and how they're going to handle it. Maybe we'll learn more today. Mm-hmm. Sean McDermott talks to us in about an hour down at practice, guys.
All right, sounds good. Sal, Happy New Year, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Happy New Year to you, everybody back at the station, and, of course, all of our listeners out there. Thank you so much. Really appreciate everybody listening all year long and into 2026.
Thank you, brother. Thanks, Sal. Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. We'll take a quick timeout, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to get your favorite stadium memories in as we, at least for us, me and Derek, we wrap up our time here on the show this week. We took some calls in the first segment. We'll keep doing that as we roll along. At 11:30, though, we'll get a little bit of Bandits action going as well. Steve Brumell will join the show. Bandits finally played another game as we're doing this weekly check-in with them. They did win it. We'll get more on that coming up at 11:30. But outside of that, the show is yours. Want to give your memories? We'd love to hear them. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Ready to take your game day to the next level? Enter online now at WGR550.com for your chance to win $300 tailgate tray certificate from Alibaba Kebab to feed 12 football families. Each Friday, a winner is going to be announced during Football Friday with Shope and the Bulldog. Fire up your taste buds at any of their three locations.
Last segment of hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, thanks to everyone that's been calling in. We'll keep taking those calls on the other side, but it is imperative to note that there's a very important game going on here today. The Buffalo Sabres are going for 10 in a row, and why is Zach not agreeing with me?
I thought you were going to mention the Citrus Bowl, Derek. Texas, Michigan? Really?
Okay.
It's a massive game. 3 o'clock ABC.
There it is.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Completely joking. The Cotton Bowl is also on today, 7:30, Miami, Ohio State. I'm going to watch Texas, Michigan because I'm here and it's on at 3. Past that, I mean, I mentioned it. Like when I came back from vacation, these minor bowl games,
But it's your guys. It's Texas.
Sure.
Hook them.
I mean, yeah, hook them, but like, I'm cool if bowl games kind of slowly disappear.
Oh, how dare you.
I know that's very humbug of me, but I mentioned it. Like,
especially you.
I know. I'm cool with the smaller programs, mid-majors, them having bowl games. I love it. I'm all for it. It's that extra game, extra exposure. For many of them, it might be their first or second game on national TV all year. I'm game for it.
You have a chance to do – well, the team has a chance to do something that less than half of schools get to.
Right.
End their season on a win.
Right.
That part alone should be enough. I'm here for the majesty of bowl season, and I hate what has happened to it and the damage that's been done.
Think the playoff for that? Huh? I mean, the playoffs effectively
you think the playoff for that. You think the playoff for that, and you also think some of the draft decisions that are made by players now more days, protecting their contract, everything, their draft value, everything like that. And you also have to thank the coaches that get to jump ship without penalty. And
have been able to for years.
And have been able to well before the transfer portal was a thing. For that as well. Like, it was a slow process, but it finally happened where the stones have crumbled. Those things were like chipping away a little bit with like just tiny like hammers, not even a sledgehammer.
I'm telling you though, guardrails in college sports, everything would be fixed. We wouldn't have former NBA players trying to get into college for college basketball. A little guardrails would be fine. I think even bowl season, like little guardrails. Even if it's you can't transfer 2 years in a row kind of deal. I think it would fix so many things, but
I'm here for the majesty.
It's college sports, and they just throw everything up in the air, and they go, I don't know what's going on, guys. It's crazy.
I do love the majesty of bowl season. I love that the Pop-Tarts Bowl has kind of made it like its own big deal.
Yeah, they're fun with it.
They're fun with it. And then, of course, the idea of, yeah, no, like college schools and programs are like huddled around the TV like, all right, what bowl game are we getting? Where are we going?
Right. You wish it had the NCAA tournament feel of like teams just waiting to see what they get. They usually know, you know, 2 to 3 games, like what they can end up getting.
UB gets the Bahamas Bowl last year.
I mentioned it, though. I haven't really liked many bowl games. I love when the mid-majors get them. That's fine. But like outside of the big New Year's Day bowls, most of them don't have the same luster. Now that we're getting more backups playing and stuff like that, it has definitely lost its luster. But Cotton Bowl tonight, Ohio State and Miami. And, of course, if you want to make fun of me with Texas and Michigan, the Citrus Bowl at 3 o'clock. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll keep taking your calls on favorite stadium memories as, for all intents and purposes, most likely Sunday is going to be the final game at the current Highmark Stadium. Gary, John, we'll get to you and many others as we come back. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.